Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com. This is the daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Wednesday, so this is an archive show, but the last time it aired was 2 to 10 years ago, so unless you're a real hardcore long-time listener, it's probably new to you. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy it. 70 years ago, on a quiet November evening, 467 psychiatric patients at the Oregon State Hospital in Salem were about to tuck into a scrambled egg supper. Before the end of the evening, 47 of them would be dead, and the rest would be in mortal agony, their teeth aching, their faces numb, their legs no longer supporting their weight as they writhed on the floor, clinging to life. A horrifying mix-up in the kitchen had resulted in their scrambled eggs being spiked with roach poison. Oregonians all over the state, who had never thought much about the occupants of the asylum, now were riveted. How could this have happened? And was it done on purpose? The events began on a Wednesday evening, November 18, 1942. The United States had just entered the Second World War, and things were not yet going particularly well. Because of the vast manpower needs of the war, all unnecessary staff members had been taken from the hospital and sent overseas. So in the kitchen, Chief Cook Mary O'Hare and Assistant Cook A.B. Mickey McKillop were on their own, cooking up an evening meal for nearly 500 people. In lieu of the staff assistants, they had the help of some trustees, high-functioning patients who'd been given the job of helping out, like interns. McKillop sent one of those trustees, a man from Medford named George Noson, down to the basement to fetch some powdered milk to mix into the eggs. These eggs, by the way, were just yolks, no whites, and presumably mixing in some milk would make them less dense. McKillop was hustling to get the meal ready and didn't have time to go downstairs and unlock doors, so in violation of the hospital's policy, he handed Noson his keys to get into the storeroom where the milk was kept. Now, at the bottom of the basement stairs were two locked rooms. On the left was the room with the dry goods, flour, sugar, powdered milk, and on the right was the room in which the fruit was stored. In that room, with the fruit, for reasons that remain unclear to this day, the hospital had decided to keep the roach poison. The poison was kept in a giant galvanized steel trash can of the type farmers often use to keep chicken feed safe from rodents. Noson went down the stairs, let himself into one of the rooms, and soon was back upstairs with a generous scoop full of white powder, 5, maybe 6 pounds of it. McKillop, with a word of thanks, tossed it into the eggs and mixed it in, poured the stuff out into the skillet, and a few minutes later was ready to serve his first patient. Within 15 minutes of the first mouthful of eggs going down the first patient's throat, the place was in horrific, lethal chaos. Patients writhed on the floor, unable to stand or sit. Some were vomiting blood. Within an hour, some of them were dead. By midnight, the death toll was at 30 and climbing. A 29-year-old patient who had barely survived the night told Oregonian staff writer Richard Noakes his story the next day. Quote, "As soon as I had swallowed the first mouthfuls of eggs, my face became numb," he whispered weakly through lips still blue from the effect of the toxin. "My teeth began to ache. Pretty soon my legs became paralyzed. They have been paralyzed most of the time since. My face is still numb." Noakes didn't mention the patient's name in the article, but he was far from alone, and he was one of the lucky ones. 47 of his fellow patients were dead by then. The roach poison's active ingredient was sodium fluoride, a substance that, in tiny doses, strengthens people's teeth, but in larger quantities quickly becomes deadly. You may recognize the name sodium fluoride from the label on your toothpaste tube. Most toothpaste contains about 0.2% sodium fluoride, and this sort of thing is exactly why you are not supposed to let small children eat toothpaste. A lethal dose is about 5 grains, an amount the size of an aspirin tablet. The hero of the day was a nurse named Allie Wassel, who was in charge of one of the 5 wards affected. Wassel took a bite of the eggs, found them unpleasant. The fluoride would have attacked her teeth instantly, probably causing them to start aching. She quickly ordered her patients to stop eating them. Hers was the only ward with no deaths in it, although she very nearly supplied one herself. The one bite she'd taken nearly killed her. Over the next few days, authorities were trying to figure out what had happened. They considered and rejected the possibility that it was some kind of particularly virulent food poisoning. Governor Charles Sprague suspected foul play. Quote, "I lean heavily toward the theory that a criminally insane patient at the hospital was responsible for the placing of sodium fluoride more deadly than a poison-fanged snake in the dinner dish," he said. But McKillop and O'Hare and Nosen knew what happened. They'd figured it out immediately after the inmate started dying. McKillop had Nosen show him the bin he'd gotten the powdered milk out of, and as he'd feared, Nosen led him straight to the fruit room. The three of them kept quiet about it for several days, terrified at what might happen to them if anyone found out. Then, at last, McKillop couldn't stand it anymore and confessed. He also claimed responsibility for the whole thing in an attempt to shield O'Hare. Both cooks were arrested and prosecuted, but the grand jury refused to indict them. Nosen, too, was never charged, but after that he was a pariah at the hospital. Nosen's was a particularly sad story, and an outrageous and shameful one into the bargain. He'd been brought to the hospital by his parents seeking treatment for his epilepsy, but on arrival he'd been diagnosed by a staff psychiatrist with paranoid schizophrenia and involuntarily committed. This has to have come as a surprise to Nosen and his family, since they don't seem to have thought he was crazy when they brought him in. Kind of like asking the IRS for help with your taxes and ending up getting arrested. The psychiatrist's justifications and intentions cannot, from the distance of so many years, be really guessed at. But the result was institutionalization for Nosen for the rest of his life. And whether he was really crazy or not, upon his arrival, he was never the same after the egg incident. Two attempts to send him forth into the world failed, and he died in the hospital in the 1980s. One good thing did come from the whole debacle, though. The Oregon State Hospital was required to get the roach poison out of the fruit room and to put a label on it. This story was first published on November 19th of 2012 under the headline, "Horrifying Asylum Kitchen Mix-Up Left Dozens Dead." Key sources included works by Dunk Kent Crispin, Andy Lindberg, Richard Noakes, and the Portland Morning Oregonian. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love, which is in turn a division of Pulplit Productions, a boutique publishing house that specializes in audiobook and regular book editions of stories from the classic pulp fiction era, Robert E. Howard, Algernon Blackwood, Edgar Rice Burroughs, and so on. We are currently working feverishly on our 13th title, a collection of all the stories on which H.P. Lovecraft collaborated with other writers. More info about Pulp Lit, including our catalog, can be found at pulp-lit.com. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license, type CC by SA International 4.0. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Got an idea for a show I should do, or just want to say hi, or maybe you're going to be in Corvallis sometime soon with time for a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead? Drop me a line at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Fresh episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come your way at around 6 a.m. every weekday morning, Pacific time, so if you can't wait for the next one, well, you haven't got long. Until then, go fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.